Okay, it's May 8th, and this is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Andrew Thomas.
Brendan Eugene.
All right. Brendan, all right.
We got Brendan and Andrew. Andrew, yes.
Yeah, and this is the night party, round table discussion. Although we're not really at a round table.
Yeah, it's kind of square.
Kind of square. And it's not really a table.
No. But Rachel is not here. But we got two other guests, which is pretty exciting. So we got four people here today. And today is Mother's Day. Yes. May 8th, Mother's Day. So hopefully everyone has done something to for their wives or mothers. And
tell us, Andrew, what have you done for your mother?
Oh, it's something really
all your
great.
Fans, all your fans are wanting to follow your lead. Because whatever you say you've done, they're going to want to do the same thing for them.
Well, I don't want to give it away.
Well, the listeners out
there.
Be
like Trump.
Yeah.
I can't give it away.
Well, the listeners out there may not know Andrew Thomas. He's with the Youth Corps. And he also has his own radio show. Teen Talk. So that's pretty exciting. So anyone out there that has teenagers, listen to Teen Talk. And when does that usually air?
Wednesdays.
Teen Talk with Andrew Thomas. It's really, really good show, exciting show.
He does a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So everyone needs to make sure they're watching that. But Andrew Thomas.
Yeah. Really rolls off the tongue.
It does.
Andrew Thomas.
It does. So yes, getting back to Mother's Day, did you do something special for Rachel, which is your mom? Did you do something
besides
special?
Washing the dishes and cleaning the house? And I know that you're saving up money to buy her a nice big box of candy.
Yep.
And I know, save up for a nice dinner.
Now, he did say yes. Now, he did say that he did clean or cut the grass at the house.
Yeah.
So he said, well, does that count?
I don't think that counts because he does that all the time.
Yeah, that's just a regular chore. You got to do something special.
Yeah, I mean, you do that all the time, which I know your mother appreciates it. And your dad probably appreciates it even more. All right. So he did nothing for his mother.
No, I just don't want to reveal it.
But anyway. But hopefully everyone out there listening have done something nice, you know, had a nice Mother's Day.
Or for your wife.
Well, at our house, and everyone at the Tennis Church and the Christian Bible Center, when we talk about Mother's Day, it's the institution of womanhood, you know. Yeah.
Even little baby women.
Every little baby, you know, is still a potential mother. And so that's, when we celebrate, you know, Mother's Day, it could be a 6-month-old baby. It could be someone that's, you know, 10 years old, doesn't matter, you know. And so it doesn't have to be, per se, someone that has children.
Even Bruce Jenner, who's not a woman.
I guess he could be.
He's a woman now.
Gender assigned mother, I guess. You know, I mean, he was a dad, but now he's mother. So I guess the question, does he celebrate Mother's Day and Father's Day? Because he is a father of some children now.
That's true.
But now he is a woman, supposedly.
I'm glad you added supposedly.
Supposedly. So maybe he did that in order to get more gifts.
Double the gifts.
Absolutely.
Double the gifts.
Yeah.
I think that could be some point to that.
Yeah.
I actually just think Kardashian ratings were down. Needed to take one for the team.
Take one for the team. Build up the ratings. Huh? Well, that probably did it. But anyway, you do anything for Lori?
I'd like to go into town a little later on and pick up a nice little card and...
Yeah.
You know, maybe some flowers.
Well, those are good suggestions. I'm going to write those down.
Flowers, cards. That's some chocolate.
Yeah. After a while, I'll probably take my wife in town, get her dinner or something like that. So, and you know what's good about taking your wife out for dinner on Mother's Day? You get dinner too.
You get dinner too. Absolutely.
So we just had, this is just 1 week since our conference.
Yes, the Faith and Freedom Conference, 2016.
Last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah. What a blast that was.
Oh, it was.
Oh, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah? Yeah. I saw y'all doing cartwheels. Open up. Everybody laughing, you do cartwheels and all that kind of thing. It was really, really neat watching you do that.
Well, thank you.
Well, I like Faith and Freedom, you know, and all our conferences I just love, but Faith and Freedom is nice, particularly this year because there were so many things going on this year, and especially, you know, we're at the beginning stage of the Christian Revival Research and Development Center, so people that came to the conference was able to actually see the beginning stage, you know, the concrete work. So that's the first stage, and people were able to see that and actually see the physical site where that building is going to be placed at.
Yeah, and it's all going to be dead. We're not taking no loans out from the bank.
No.
So,
it all depends. For, yeah, everyone yeah. that's you know, tithing and donating to it is that how we get it built.
Absolutely.
So we always make sure any projects we do, there's not a loan or mortgage associated with that at all.
Yeah.
And so that's really that's just what we do. I mean, so. It was nice. We had some great speakers. You know, our feature speaker was Don Black of Stormfront. And, of course, Don Black, you know, he's been involved in the white resistance, you know, since the late 70s.
I said he was a teenager.
14 years old, I think he said. And so it was really a pleasure to see him again.
And his wife was up here, Chloe. Yep.
And he drove all the way from Florida. So, it takes a while, you know, to get here. And then we had William Johnson from California and American Freedom Party and a well-respected attorney in Los Angeles area. And he's been
and
involved.
He gave Mom a nice award.
Yes.
Andrew, why didn't you go get it? It's up on the bookshelf in there.
And he, and of course, he's been in the white resistance since the 80s. And actually, one of the great things about when he was talking about how he is – office was bombed when he first got involved in the white resistance as an attorney. And so there's always people are always talking about the terrorist attacks against poor innocent blacks. Well, that happens against those in the white resistance. And William Johnson, he had his office building bombed in the 80s. And so it was but he's been involved a long time.
But now he's in Los Angeles. That's not That is not just common practice for people in the movement.
No.
That you're going to get a place firebomb.
No, no.
So people who are maybe listening, maybe get involved, don't think your place is going to be bombed. Or tomorrow.
But he was like right downtown L.A.
Yeah, and he was right outspoken. You know, most people in the white resistance are good, faithful supporters. Know the job has to be done. Know somebody has to pay for it. You know, we're not getting big financial contributions from Wall Street. Somebody has to pay for it, and so they are faithful in sending their tithe and contributions, which helps those who are in the public eye to be more effective in getting in the witnessing and proclamation of the message.
Right.
Anyway, here's the certificate that Mr. Johnson gave to Mom. I'll let you read it. So.
Well, it says Patriotic Recognition Certificate. In honor of Richard D. Mullins, to all persons to whom these presents may come greeting, be it known that Miss Mariel Robb is hereby recognized for her contribution to Western Heritage as a Mullins Fellow or Mullins Peer with an honorum in the amount of $1,000 and with all the rights, privileges, immunities thereto appertaining. And it was signed by William Johnson, who's the administrator of this fund. And it was signed on April 27th, 2016. And William Johnson, who's the administrator of this fund, every year recognizes someone that's been in the resistance that has basically dedicated their lives to the resistance, helping secure the future for our people. And this is an award that is given out every year. And it just kind of makes it to show their appreciation. And there's
right.
a little bit
of fun too. Mom is not on the forefront, so people hardly even think she exists.
Right.
But she's very behind the scenes, very active and a powerful force. But her name is not out. Now, she does the Bible stories for children on KKK Radio.
Right.
So you can see her and listen to those programs every day. If you have children, you need to listen to that every day.
Well, you and her, of course, been married 50 years. We just had the 50th wedding anniversary Sunday night at Faith and Freedom Conference.
And she still hasn't got rid of him.
Exactly. Still haven't got rid of
it. Yeah.
Well, speaking about behind the scenes, this was the first time that I actually got to participate in the helping of preparing for the Faith and Freedom Conference.
Right.
And, you know, before I had just attended and just sat down and, you know, gone to get my breakfast and my lunch and my supper, listened to the speakers.
Yeah.
And, you know, preparing for this, I really realized, especially at the last moment when it's the crunch down.
Right.
And getting everything perfect. There's a lot of work that goes into something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And it gets hectic.
It does.
It gets really hectic.
A little sleep.
Yeah.
3 to 4 hours a night. Getting up early the next morning to start again.
Yeah.
And you had somebody ask, well, what do you do the last three or four days? It's hard to explain. Because so much is a tiny little stuff.
Yes.
You know, that just needs to be neat and picked up. Sometimes something has to be fixed. A gate had to be fixed. Example, numerous little things. Changing the filters in the air conditioning units. Yep. Making light switches that maybe don't work. And just all kinds of little things that you don't think about that just pile up and has to be done.
Well, and then plus with that is, you know, for the last several years, we also have had building projects, you know. And so when you're having the building projects, you just try and coordinate that along with the conference.
Correct.
You know, and so it's just a lot of strategy and maneuvering things, you know, from the building equipment to the machinery. To try to spruce the grounds up, you know, and got even with flags, and if no one's been to the conferences, we have flags all over the place at the Soldiers of the Cross Bible Camp, and so that takes a while. But all the flags of Europe and our sister nations, and so that takes a while, and then cutting grass, and like you said, it's just a lot behind the scenes.
We have a lot of projects.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two projects started, three more still not finished.
And what did you say, Pastor Rob, was the best part of the
day after?
The day after. The day after. It's a big...
Yeah. Yeah, the day after. I had a reporter ask me a few years ago, I said, so you really look forward to your conferences, don't you? And I said, no, not at all. He said, really? I said, I look forward to the day after. So it's always nice, but it's always a good satisfaction knowing that everything looks good. We want people to come here, feel relaxed, and enjoy themselves. And we want to feel like they've gone to a retreat. And we want the grounds looking nice and pretty and everything. And we want them to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, at our conferences where it's located at, it's not located in a city. It's not right downtown of any major city. So you don't have to worry about the conferences being closed or canceled at the last minute. And everything is focused around the family. And so it's out in a rural area, out in the country. And it really is like going to a retreat. Yeah. You know, there's picnic tables and we have a nice pond that people sit around. Children are out playing. It's everything's focused around the family, and people can just relax and just be able to have fun. They don't have to worry about, you know, a zombie jumping out of the tree somewhere.
Yeah. Speaking about all about the family, I had met a gentleman who came all the way from Alabama, and I guess he had heard about Faith and Freedom through somebody else, and he kind of thought maybe it was a gentleman's meeting.
Right.
And he came there, and once he saw all the children and the nursery and everything like that, he was like, man, I really wish I brought my family.
Right.
You know, he felt guilty in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if this person I'm thinking you're referring to, because we had a lot of people there, he was told, bring your family. But he was hesitant about it.
Right.
Because he'd never been here before.
Right.
So, and then he said, now I wish I had.
Right.
And that happens a lot.
Yeah.
That happens a lot because it really is a nice family atmosphere in between speakers. There's usually some nice gospel music playing on the speakers. It's a nice relaxing time for people.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's nice because even the evening time where people sitting outside and hear the whippoorwills and the crickets and frogs and stuff like that, and you're not hearing sirens, you're not hearing the like police helicopters, you know, trying to look for thugs, and you're not looking for or seeing cop cars driving by real quick, and a police chase
behind your head,
yeah, or sirens or anything like that. So, yeah, exactly. Well, when I went to law school in Washington or in Oklahoma City, It was funny. About 11 o'clock at night, I mean, almost to the point, 11 o'clock every night, you always could hear the police helicopter flying over with their spotlights. I'm like, right on time, about 11 o'clock. You know.
That's when the zombies come out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we all had sad news when we heard about that zombie that died. What was the name? Prince?
Oh, Prince. Prince.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a sad story.
It was. I'm still mourning over it.
Yeah.
You know, and
I don't know, life just won't be the same anymore.
It really won't. And, you know, and I've been contemplating Prince's life, you know, over the last several weeks, you know, and, you know, I hope they find out, you know, if he was murdered or if he died of natural causes. You know, they said that he was awake for 7 straight days before he died.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you know, I just was thinking, you know, what was he thinking about for those last 7 days? Never sleeping, just 7 days awake. You know, I mean, was he shooting up?
I don't know.
Was he crack? Was he cocaine?
What do zombies do?
Yeah, and you know, just 7 days of not sleeping. You know, I'm still mourning over it.
But I heard some other sad news dealing with the musical personality, and that Kanye West. You know, because you know Prince was found dead in his apartment,
right?
And then a few days later, Kanye West.
Right.
He was found alive in his apartment.
Right.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's another sad story.
Still alive.
He and Kardashian, Kim Kardashian or whatever,
yeah.
They went to Cuba back a few days ago. And some, I guess, to do a little tourist thing, and some state congressman, I don't know if it was white or black, I don't know anything about him, Democrat or Republican, I have no idea. I just know the person. When heard about Kim Kardashian and Kanye West going to Cuba, said, "Haven't the Cuban people suffered enough?"
And those poor Cubans.
Now they've had to deal with this.
Now I would like to go back to Prince because
back to Prince because
something I really found interesting about that is how everyone is so concerned about how he died. When he died, just all this different stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they want to do DNA samples, background checks of everything.
Yeah.
But then, back when that famous Supreme Court Judge Scalia died,
that's the point.
Oh, we're not going to do an autopsy. He died.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, when Scalia died, it was like a big yawn, put him in the ground. Prince died. Oh no! What, he died?
Another autopsy. Yeah. They never did an autopsy on Scalia.
That's a good point, Andrew.
He's not going to finish his latest album.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I never thought about that. Yeah. Talk about other ridiculous things. I like to think about is they always talk about Social Security. Will Social Security survive? Will it be around there for your kids? Will it be around there for you when you retire? You know, we may have to cut back, make change to Social Security. Blah blah blah. Where's Social Security going to be at? I never hear anybody talk about cutting back on welfare checks.
Yeah.
Will the welfare checks be there? Oh, yeah. They're going to be there. Guaranteed. Yeah. The welfare checks will be there.
Yeah. You got the voters. He's going to want that.
But the Social Security check, maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a good point. Yeah. But the, you know, like Andrew was talking about the Scalia thing, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting because of the fact that, you know, when he died, I mean, here's a sitting U.S. Supreme Court justice, major cases that was coming up that term.
I mean, he might have been the most conservative one on there.
Yeah, and when he died, no autopsy, none whatsoever. We're just going to put him in the ground, you know, and didn't even want him to attempt to see if he actually died of natural causes or if he was murdered, because there had been people that speculated that he might have been poisoned or something else, and just not even, we're not even going to go down that road. You know, that was their attitude.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been talking about faith and freedom, and everything we talked about faith and freedom kind of leads to why they should attend our National Congress coming up in September.
Yes.
Because of the grounds will be there, and we'll have some great speakers and some good events and some children. So that's on the Labor Day weekend. I think it's September 3, 4, and 5. I may be mistaken on that. But we may find out here shortly. But it's Labor Day weekend anyway. And people need to plan on coming to that if you like. You know, They really need to consider that.
Well, I always tell people it's very easy if you want to come to the conference, it's very easy to do. You just walk to your calendar, mark off the dates,
and come.
And come. I mean, it's really that simple. If that person's really wanting to attend the conference, then you can find an excuse not to show up. You can always find an excuse.
Something that also I've heard people say, well, I can't afford to miss that day at work. It's not, or I'll have to drive all night to get back home for work. And people need to realize it's not about them. It's about their kids.
Right.
You know, that's what it's about. I hear all the time parents say, I can't come because of this reason. I can't come because of this reason. And most of the reasons are can be overcome.
Right.
I'm not going to say in every case. I don't know every case. But most of the time, it can be overcome with a little bit of foresight and planning. But it's always some reason why they can't come, because it's something mom has to do or something dad has to do. And that's understandable. They're responsible to care for the family. But nevertheless, your responsibility also to those children. And it's not about them. It's about their kids. Getting those kids in the right environment and helping them to see that it's more than just mom and dad. But there's a network of people who will care about this country and care about the future, their future.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
It's not about mom and dad. It's about the kids.
Well, you really can't afford not to go.
That's right. Well, but people don't understand that. Yeah. They don't understand that. It's a shame.
Well, and more than anything, it's a good teaching tool, because you got to show to your kids that this is an important deal. This is an important part of your life. And if you're not placing any type of importance on it, your kids definitely won't when they get older. They don't see you making that sacrifice, saying, hey, you need to, you know, we're going to go to this conference. You're going to surround yourself with other people that are caring about your future and be around other children. If you don't place an importance on it, they're not going to do it. And like you said, that's what people don't realize. Their attitude is about themselves and not much on their children.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but the conference is actually September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
2, 3, and 4.
Yep. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay.
2, 3, and 4. And that's in September, Labor Day.
And that'll be here before you know it.
That's Congress.
Congress.
Yeah. And then in October, the fourth Saturday of October, is the European American Heritage Festival of Pulaski, Tennessee.
Yeah.
That's October 22nd.
October 22nd.
Yep.
And that's all great, because we have Walk for White Pride and display the flags and outdoor activity and townspeople, local people, tourists coming by and getting information and visiting. That's always a great event, too.
That'll be our 31st year.
31st year. Wow. Yeah, time keeps marching on. Hmm. So that'll be a good thing for people to attend. So anyway, I saw in the news the other day that they're going to be taking down, I'm sure you all seen the story. I can't recall what university it was, but they're removing the Confederate monument from some university. Did you see that? It was in Kentucky.
Was it in Kentucky?
I think it was in Kentucky.
That the one that a judge temporarily blocked the removal?
Yes.
Yes.
So a judge had temporarily blocked.
Yeah, a state judge temporarily blocked it because of the fact that it could call it irreparable harm to remove it at this point while their litigation are still proceeding. And so the judge temporarily has blocked the removal of the statue.
But they're not going to stop. The opposition is not going to stop.
No.
The Nathan Bedford Forrest statue in Memphis, they've been pushing that for 30 years.
Right.
And they keep making headway. They keep making headway. And I'm not sure what the status is right now. We've been involved in that a little bit because we have offered to pay for the removal and transportation of that monument to Arkansas, to the Christian Revival Center. And that could still happen.
Right.
We're not sure what's going to happen there. But they've been pushing for that for 30 years.
Well, that's still up in the hands of the committee. Historical committee to what they're going to do with the statue. I mean, but they're going to remove it. So that's not the question if they're going to remove it. They're going to definitely remove it. It's just where are they going to remove it to? Are they going to remove it to another site? Or are they going to
dump it in the river?
Yeah, dump in the river.
Yeah.
And then
I saw in Virginia, some, I think it was in the state capitol, Richmond, where they're wanting to remove the Robert E. Lee monument.
Right.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
So they're wanting to remove that. So they're not going to stop till every monument, every symbol, every image, every flag, anything that helps create a white identity.
Well, and
totally destroyed.
And the thing is, you know, you get a lot of people that says, well, that's, those are all Confederate soldiers and Confederate historical. And they don't, what they don't understand is that it has nothing to do with the Confederacy, because the plan is not just to do that, but to remove any identity of a hero. And that would include American heroes. They're already wanting to remove Thomas Jefferson. They're already wanting
Andrew Jackson. Andrew off the
Jackson,
money.
Yeah, the money.
$20 bill, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And those weren't people involved in the Confederacy.
No.
So it's not just an issue where, these people, I mean, they're not even part of the United States because they fought against it. They're terrorists or whatever.
Right.
They're fighting against, they're trying to take down everything.
Yeah. Right.
Not just Confederates.
And the excuse for Andrew Jackson of $20 bill is, he was a slave owner. So will George Washington. They can go after him now.
Well, they have been taught to try to remove monuments of George Washington. You know.
Now you had a thing this happened over in South Africa, didn't
it
you, brother?
It did.
What happened over there?
Well, just after 1994, when Nelson Mandela became president, a lot of national monuments were being destroyed. We had a beautiful national monument of Jan van Riebeck and his wife Marie, and that was taken down in the city of Cape Town.
Now, he was a Dutch explorer and founder of Cape Town, right?
Yes, 1652.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And, later on the flag was changed, the national anthem was changed. It'd be the equivalent of your flags being taken down here and like a Confederate flag, but only, either.
But even the American flag is under attack.
Right.
People think, well, American flag is an American flag, but that is considered a symbol of the old white establishment.
Right.
And I know the Ninth Circuit Court, which operates with California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Idaho,
Hawaii,
how many, several numerous states. They've already ruled that if there's a contention between the American flag and the Mexican flag, the Mexican flag rules. They've already ruled that. The Mexican flag has supersedes the American flag if there's a contention and possible
hostile
environment from Mexican students and so forth who feel offended by the American flag. To lessen their concern and lessen their offense, the American flag has been removed.
Well, and the case that you brought down is you in a school in California. On Cinco de Mayo Day, you had some white kids who wore the American flag on that day, and the school basically did not allow the white kids to wear American flags. They asked them to remove the T-shirts, turn them around, because it's Cinco de Mayo Day, and it was a celebration of the Mexican heritage and culture.
It was going to
create a hostile environment to the Mexicans. And as a result of that, the school had the right to allow the school to ban kids from wearing American flags. You know, and that's a major stepping stone. You know, and so
I mean, the Mexican students, they just need a safe place. They need to feel a place,
a safe zone
where they feel safe.
The safe zone.
Thank you, Andrew, for that. Speaking about a safe place, and this has no relationship to what you said, but I'm going to use that anyway. Obama wants to build a monument to the contributions that homosexuals and gays and LGBT and sexually confused. And,
well, they're the very fabric of society.
Oh, of course.
I mean, the homosexual movement.
They built America.
Well, I believe the National Park Service, something like that, they've already registered two, gay landmarks as an official.
In New York City, right.
Yeah.
In New York City, it's going to be the first national monument towards gay, lesbians, transgender, confused, transgender
identity. They got so many letters on the alphabet.
I don't know what it is.
I think the last time I looked at it, it's LGBTQI.
Yeah, okay. And
the Q is for queer, which I mean...
What is I for?
I don't know. Intersex.
Well, here, I'm going to kind of get off the track here a little bit. But, you know, I attended a conference down in Little Rock about 2 weeks ago. And it's dealing with, called Children of the Law Conference. And children that's involved in court systems and stuff like that. And one of the speakers I attended, I thought, hey, I'm going to get my kick out of this, was a speaker who's a professor at Little Rock, Arkansas. And she teaches a class on sexual identity, basically your queer class, you know, and sexual identities, sexually confused, like that. And so,
and how did you manage to end up in that class?
So I thought, hey, I'm going to attend this class, see what they have to say, you know. And it was kind of interesting because she, of course, she's a queer herself, but there was talking about all. She had the definitions, all of the definitions of all. From gay to lesbian to bisexual, transgender, gender reassigned. You just name
a whole slew of them.
And she kind of started laughing because she goes, well, sometimes, you know, I get kind of confused on the different names as well because she said there's so many, you know. But she said that the trend is that 30 year olds and under that are basically your homosexuals. The term that they are now using, she makes it as a good thing, that they're embracing is the word queer. That they are embracing that word queer. And so they like to start identifying themselves as queer. Where the older generation of queers, they think that's taboo because it's like negative and everything else. But she said the younger crowds are embracing that word
it's
of queer.
All the rage.
So now when you say queer, you know, you're not offending it. You're not offending them, you know? So you should be name calling. I'm not. That's how they want to be referred as.
Right, queer. I really can't wait till they want to start referring themselves as fags. Then, you know, I won't be offending you.
Well, if you're not offended by, if you're not ashamed of being a fag, then being called a fag probably won't bother you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you're not ashamed of being that.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting, and this all hinges onto the Trump phenomenon.
Right.
Because the reason they don't like Trump, and this can have some great impact upon the whole movement, okay? And I know Trump will not be savior, because there's element of people in the right wing, or the white national, I shouldn't say the white national, but the white right wing Christian identity movement, who have the idea that if you...
Are you talking about that Trump is not the savior, but instead they think that we believe that Trump is a savior and is going to save America, and there's no reason for the return of Jesus Christ to have a righteous kingdom.
Yeah, they have this idea that if you're for Trump, that then you're like rejecting God or something like that.
Right, which is silly.
Sure, it's silly.
Right.
But the point is that it's opening up the dialogue.
Right.
Because there's been a huge number, really huge number of people who support Trump, what Trump has been saying, that have been there for years.
Right.
But they had no voice for their feelings. And so people like Bush, they would get elected president, and then all these people, all these conservatives, all these Christians, who are going down and voting the lever for Bush, and Bush thinking, I got all these people supporting me. But once there was an opposition or a contrast, they abandoned Bush overnight,
right,
and are supporting Trump. Not that Trump is the savior, but the Trump has opened up the dialogue, so there people can discuss things now that they're afraid to discuss before.
Well, he has sparked nationalism,
absolutely,
because the core of white people are nationalistic in nature,
right?
And the fact is, He basically has got that crowd, that core of America, coming towards his side because they've never had a mouthpiece before. And people from Ann Coulter and others have basically said the same thing, that he has sparked nationalism, you know, and that's why they're supporting him. And this idea, and that's why his crowds that the people attend. That's why he's having 30, 40,000 people.
Right.
They can't even get them all into the auditoriums. They have, right. People have to wait right. outside. And he's breaking the record on people attending these different conferences and auditoriums and stuff like that. Romney didn't have nearly that amount. Bush never had that nearly that amount. But the fact is, he has sparked nationalism.
Right. Well, this is going to reverberate the effects all on all kinds of issues that people. It's going to be issues that it's not on a national issue yet, but it's right on the edge of being recognized. This is a racial issue. You look at all the opposition to Trump, and it's almost always non-whites. There's a few whites sprinkled in there, and a lot of those are Jews, like Bernie Sanders, you know. But there's a host of opposition to Trump, and it's primarily coming from your non-white crowd.
I'm just happy that someone like Trump has his own financing, that he doesn't have to be so as walking on eggshells in order for someone to pull out,
right?
You know, if he says something they don't agree with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, go ahead.
I thought it was very funny when a Republican commented on the fact that in 2012, Mitt Romney was perceived as the presumptive nominee when he had way less votes than Trump.
Right.
But he has all these votes and they're still, oh, he doesn't have the majority support of the party. Well, all those other guys, they have even less than that.
Yeah. And they would talk about how, well, 60% of the people voted against Trump. Well, yeah, but a higher percentage voted against Cruz, yeah. You know. So it's all been interesting. And again, I don't know. Trump may not follow through. It's possible he won't follow through what he says. I think he will, but he may not. But the point is that at least he's saying the right things.
Right.
Well, you know, the fact is, you know,
Anyway, Jason has left the room. Have you noticed that? The gust of wind just poof, and he's vacant. Like right here, he was sitting, and now he's gone. Jason, see, no answer. All right, but he will be back already.
And he's back.
He is back.
Yes.
All right, and now.
What I was saying is kind of getting back with what Bryn was talking about on Trump having his own money. The previous election, you had candidates. You had Ron Paul, who 4 years ago ran for president, and 4 years before that. And Ron Paul was a U.S. representative from the state of Texas, and he was basically a nationalist from the standpoint, you know, he believed that we needed to stop immigration, that we needed to get out of NAFTA, GATT, and any economic policies that was really hurting the United States and getting our troops out of these foreign wars. Everything that Donald Trump is saying, Ron Paul has said, but Ron Paul didn't have the money, didn't have the funds available like Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, fortunately, you know, had billions of dollars that he didn't have to rely, you know, on other can't or on other funds. And so there has been politicians, Ron Paul in the most recently, that has really tried to sound the alarm,
yeah,
but unfortunately, you know, just didn't have the funds available on that.
Yeah.
Now Andrew, did now your team talk, have you talked about the Trump dilemma or the popularity of Trump or anything like that?
I've discussed it a little bit. But I mostly try to stick to issues revolving more about teens.
Right. Well, there's a lot of teens that are really excited about the political arena, especially with Donald Trump. I mean, there's been a big surge. I know in the youth corps, there's a lot of teens that are signing up under the Nice Party Youth Corps program that we have. And so teens are really getting excited with the fact that, you know, there is someone out there, a political figure that is speaking up for them, you know, because they're facing a minority status here in the next few years.
Well, I mean, they're already pretty much in the minority.
Right.
I think everyone below 16, which I'm riding on that last wave of majority, everyone below it, they're already pretty much in the minority.
Yeah.
So,
well, statistically, I believe, well, statistically, I think 2020 is the official year that the U.S. Census Bureau have put on America as far as the census, that white kids, which are under 18, will be a minority in the United States. White children in the public school systems are already a minority in the United States. And so the white teens see what's happening. I mean, just go to school and they can see that they're becoming the minority. And because they're becoming the minority, there is a real hatred against them. I mean, they see their cultures being destroyed. They're seeing the figures and the monuments being destroyed. I mean, they see an all-out attack against their belief system, Christianity, their heritage, and
the
so
morals, values, everything.
And so white teens, you know, are looking at Trump, and they start saying, "Hey, here's a guy that is talking about my beliefs. They are talking about stopping the immigrations. They are talking about manufacturing jobs coming back in the United States, because everything he's talking about affects the teens." And so I think teens are really starting to be awakened as well regarding all this. There was a thing I saw yesterday that Marie Le Pen in France, that the white French men, French women over there, the white teens over there, basically had the highest statistically as far as supporting Le Pen's party.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to happen here. It's going to continue to grow because there is this anger. And the minority, and that term don't even mean anything anymore.
I was going to say non-white.
Yeah, they're not minorities, you know.
Yeah.
I catch that because, you know, that's how I've been around for 50 years. The last, it's become an adult, 70 years my whole life. That's what you hear, minority, but they're not the minority.
No.
And they are the non-white majority in the country. Right. The non-white majority in this country are growing with rage because they feel emboldened and they feel that they're starting to feel their numbers. And that's why they're showing up at these Trump rallies and so forth. They're trying to shut them down. So this anger they have is going to grow with intensity. And when this election comes on November 8th, I've been saying for a while now, I'm sure others have too, that on November 8th election, everything, America is going to change forever. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have one or two things going to happen. You're either going to have Hillary gets elected. And if that's the case, then we plunge totally down into the dark hole.
Full steam ahead.
Yeah. We're gone as far as even a semblance of our previous history. But if Trump gets elected, I heard people talking on one radio program the other day, a conservative right-wing nationalist program, and one of the hosts was saying, well, their concern is that if Trump gets elected, people may feel complacent and feel, okay, we won the battle, it's all we won, and feel complacent. That was the case in every other election. That's not the case in this election, because in this election, they're not going to have an opportunity to feel be complacent, because the rage and anger come from the non-white majority to be so great. They're not going to walk away into the night either.
No.
You know, they feel enraged and angered, and if Trump gets elected, they're going to feel they've got a target, and they're going to be after it. You know, so we're going to find a real outpouring of rage coming from the non-white majority in this country. And so white people are not going to have a chance to feel complacent. They're going to see this anger up face to face. And so things are going to change on November 8th when either Trump gets elected or Hillary gets elected. It's either all the way down to the dark hole forever, or we have an emboldened, angered rage come from the non-white majority in this country.
So when you say rage, are you talking potential riots?
I see potential
the National Guard getting involved.
Demonstrations.
Maybe we can put all that behind a wall.
What we need to do is just come together. Now, how is this our program? When the non-white majority become enraged, I'll just gather me a bouquet of flowers, and I'll go to them and say, can't we just all get along and have peace?
You guys have so much culture.
Yeah.
We want to partake in your culture.
Yeah. We want to just all be
our culture
as one important. People.
Yeah. But no, I that's a very good question, Brendan. I definitely see that. I see that there'll be parts in your major cities, because your major cities are based in your third world countries. You
know? Everyone,
yeah.
Well, there's already been rioting in your major cities.
Yeah. And because of that, you're going to have the state and National Guards, you know, being deployed to go into these inner cities, because they're basically third world countries.
And it may not be just like a city just erupt in riots, but it'll be something to provoke them. You know, if Trump begins to enact, if he actually begins to enact any of his policies, you know, if they start building a wall in Mexico, trucks hauling materials to the wall, maybe sabotage, attack.
Right.
There may be a police officer who defends himself, as Andrew just said. We've already seen that, of course, in several cities. Mm-hmm. Ferguson and Baltimore, the most notable.
All blacks really need to see, or just, you know, non-whites, not blacks specifically, is cop shoots black kid.
Yeah, that's all they need to say.
And then riots everywhere. Yeah.
So I can see, because they'll feel they're in the corner. They'll feel they've been backed into the corner, and they'll come out with a vengeance.
And plus, it doesn't have to be necessarily them doing it as a massive unit, you know, crowd, but just the fact of cops and whites in general are evil and racist.
Yeah.
And if you're white, you're wearing the wrong gang color, as they would like to identify it as, instead of being the Blood and Crips, you know, blue and red.
Mm-hmm.
They see a white person, and you're the enemy.
Right.
And so that's why, you know, you get families and wives and husbands are killed every day. Women are being raped. That's why you see cops just sitting in their cop cars, and blacks going up there and just shoot them. You know?
Yeah.
And so it's going to increase.
And not even... And people fail to understand that it don't have to even be white cops.
Right.
Because they feel all cops represent the white power structure.
Right.
So a black cop is still considered an enemy. Right. People have an idea that it's just like by non-white majorities could be attacking white cops. No, all cops.
Right.
Because all police officers, all law enforcement represents in their mind the white ruling class. And that the black police officers are just Uncle Toms who've sold out. So they consider black officers being the enemy also.
Yeah.
And so I would not want to be a police officer.
Well, like blacks, I mean, don't they murder blacks more than they actually murder whites?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they might, like, put on this united front, they're also just generally
zombies.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, there are more blacks killed in Chicago last week, you know, than the Klan has been accused of killing in the past century.
Yeah.
And they're killing each other. Yeah. Just like I told that Camille Bell in that recent show, United Shades of America. If our people were in control, blacks themselves would be safe in their own communities.
Yes.
Right.
And they're not. They're not safe in their communities anymore.
That's how it was in South Africa.
Right.
South Africa was a very prosperous nation. Everything.
Yes. Well, so was Rhodesia, you know. Yeah.
Right. Rhodesia's breadbasket of Africa, I guess. Yeah. And now Rhodesia or Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe.
Well, what's the president of Zimbabwe, whatever his name is, was like Mugabe or
something. Mugabe.
Mugalali.
Robert Mugabe.
Yeah.
What's funny is
we should just have an entire session trying to pronounce African names.
Yeah. But what's funny, he's like very recently he's pleading for the white farmers that left to come back.
Right.
Because there's no one that's there growing anything.
Right. Well, even you had mentioned a while back ago I don't know if it was maybe the Zulu tribe said that they announced that South Africa was under better control when the white government was in control. You know, they had better lives.
The King of the Zulus said that back last fall.
Yeah, okay.
Can't think of his name, but King of the Zulus.
Yeah.
And he said that last fall.
Yeah.
And people could probably find it if they want to research it.
Just Google it. It's
a news story on it.
Yeah. Blacks are incapable of building or maintaining, and Africa is a very rich continent.
Yeah.
It has all these resources. White people tapped into them.
Yes.
And as soon as they left, blacks can't maintain it.
They can't dig a well. You know, they got some missionaries over there to teach them how to dig a well so they won't urinate and send more of their drink out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking about digging, at the Christian Revival Center just yesterday, Pastor Rob and his wife and myself, we planted two trees. Martha and George is what we named them. They are what, the pear trees? Or they don't bear fruit?
Flowering pear. They don't bear root.
Yeah.
They're flowering pear.
Yes. So Martha and George, so any of you that come out to Congress, you get to see the two new flowers outside of the front of the Knights Party building.
Yeah.
And
Brenda was really concerned that one might get put a little bit crooked, because I told him that it better be straight, because if it's not straight, 30 years from now, people are going to come out here and say, how come this flowery pear tree is front of the altar? How come it's crooked? And somebody else says, oh, that old man up there, that Brendan up there, sitting up there in the wheelchair, that old man up there, that old guy, he planted that years ago. And then they'll come dance around, ha ha, Brendan the crooked pear tree man. So, you want to make sure they're straight.
Yeah, you got to do that.
Yeah. But it looks good. It looks good.
Yeah.
And we built a nice archway over there.
It's beautiful. Good. Beautiful.
It's not totally completed yet, but beautiful archway.
Right.
Needs a nice, fence along it, you know.
That's been
And a nice gate. I think a big green gate.
A green gate.
Yes.
What about a gate in rainbow colors?
Oh, no, that just reminds me of the Rainbow Nation that they tried to form in South Africa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Failed.
We're the only church that probably could put, I shouldn't say the only church, there are others in the country, but, you know, that could put a sign above our church saying, you may not be welcome.
Right.
Everybody's not welcome here.
Yeah.
You know, because most churches, everybody welcome.
Yeah. Right. All welcome.
Yeah. In our church, no, you may not be welcome.
We do have standards.
Yeah, yeah. We do have standards, and you may not be welcome.
Yes.
So, how much time we got yet? We got like 6 minutes, Jason.
Yeah. Well,
and so we're moving right along here.
Time is flying by fast.
It is flying by, because now we're already up to the middle of May, and June is around the corner, and then we're in the summer, and then pound, 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 National Clan Congress will be hitting us right and left.
And we'll almost be.
And then right after that, we got our October European American Heritage Festival. We come back and it's wintertime. It's fall.
Right.
And that's always pretty time of year here.
Yeah.
But then it's wintertime, and then you know what happens right after that?
Spring.
Faith and freedom.
Faith and freedom.
Around the corner. And Brendan's already feeling, oh.
really, every other day, it's been totally different here. Like, it's been hot. Or it's been cold. I'm starting to become an environmentalist after all.
The last few days almost felt like fall.
Yeah.
It had a fall feel to it.
Yeah. Nice and cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, I always appreciate that, you know, the cool weather. I was like fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not yet here, Jason.
Don't wish the summer away quite yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I know we don't have that much time left, but, you know, really encourage people out there, you know, people that are listening to this, you know, encourage your families and your friends to, you know, to be more bold on their activity, on everything they're doing. Take advantage of this ride with Trump. Because we're really he's opened the dialogue, and it legitimizes everything we have been saying and others have been saying for decades.
The thing is, we were saying things 30 years ago that was only among a few so-called extremists,
right? Mm-hmm.
And now it's talked about in the national news.
Oh, absolutely.
We would come for a wall. the Trump wall,
yeah,
on the border before we anybody even heard of Trump.
Yeah,
right.
We've been talking. We just don't have the mouthpiece that Trump has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
I mean, yeah, because that was talked about even like in the '70s.
Yeah,
because even at that time there was massive immigration coming in.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I actually thought it was interesting when I saw that on Mexico's southern border.
Oh, they have a wall.
They have a wall to all their Central American neighbors.
Yeah, they don't want them in.
Oh, no. Mexico has extreme punishment for people that come into the country illegally.
Well, I mean, any punishment in Mexico, realistically, is pretty extreme because their prison system is horrible.
Yeah.
You go there and you're going to be mistreated very poorly.
I wouldn't want to spend the night in Mexican prison.
No.
Yeah. Absolutely not. So yeah, the people out there, they need to be bold as well. And, you know, and even, you don't have to say, oh, I'm a racialist or whatever. And if you need to use the card of being a Trump supporter, because basically the talking points are exactly the same.
Yeah.
And just help people stop immigration, you know, and stop the Muslims coming in and the so-called refugees, you know, which I hate that term, but regardless, those are all talking points that people are talking about. The immigration,
right.
our manufacturing base, bring the jobs back in,
yeah.
Everything. And when you're talking to people about immigration, tell them, hey, you know, look at this website, Put Troops on the Border. That's a website that the Knights sponsors.
PutTroopsOnTheBorder.com.
You know, and so these are websites that you can throw out there, White Pride Radio. And people are not going to get offended when you say White Pride Radio, because that's the talking point.
Right, and you don't have to say you're a supporter of it.
Just say, hey, here's an interesting
I came across this website the other day.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
WhitePrideRadio.com.
Yeah. And so, you know, Put Troops on the Border and White Pride Radio. And
again, people might say, well, I'm not sure I have enough nerve. I'm a little scared, a little bit intimidated. It's not about you. It's about your kids.
Exactly.
You know? Get over your fear. Get over your being intimidated. Get over it. It's about your kids. You know, what's going to happen to your little baby your wife holds her arm, or your little baby that you're holding your arm? What's going to happen in 20, 30 years from now?
Yeah.
So get over being fearful. And you know, we don't expect people to walk into their job and start, you know, wear a white power t-shirt. And, you know, when you're at a place of employment, you are considered to do your job. And not
we don't want you to lose your job.
Yeah,
either.
We don't want people losing their jobs. But nevertheless, people can be a little more bold than they are.
Right.
And, you know, they could get literature. There's literature on our website at KKK.com website that you can download and print. And you can purchase literature from the national office.
If you don't really want to be seen as a figurehead of the movement or just someone, you know, that's known and you want to stay private, you can still give out literature. You can drive through a neighborhood,
right?
Roll up some articles or whatever, and throw it out your window. Yeah.
And the most important thing is you can donate.
Absolutely.
That's the most important thing. People need to donate, because the people that are able to be public, the people that are able to get out literature and pay for these websites and stuff like that, it takes money. And like, again, we're not supported by Fortune 500 companies. We still have not received that check for $100,000 from Coca-Cola. I'm hoping every day we get that. We still haven't received it.
Yeah.
You know, so I want everyone to know we still have not received that check.
Yeah.
So the thing is, we're supported by moms and dads and families that care about this country, and there's no reason why you cannot support this movement.
Yeah, any amounts all adds up together.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
I know that from personal experience with the white resistance movements in South Africa.
Right.
You know, people are very dedicated to it.
Right.
And, you know, if it's $2 you can afford, it's $2.
Yeah.
It all adds up in the end.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what's also, when people make that contribution, let your kids see you doing it.
Yes.
You know, if you're making that check, let them see you write out that check.
Right.
Put some money in the envelope, let them lick the envelope where you put the check inside. Let them be part of it. Let them see that this is important.
Yes.
Your children have got to see this is an important, important deal. This is a big deal. And it's worth every effort, because if we don't save America, it's all gone. It'll be gone. And that doesn't discount. We certainly understand the whole concept of God intervening and working on our behalf. But on the same token, repentance means not just observing and knowing something's wrong. Repentance means doing something about it. You can walk into your bedroom. If you tell your child, Jason, that your bedroom is messy, clean it up, and they walk in and say, "You're right, Dad, this bedroom is a mess." Then turn around and walk away. Is that obedience? No. Obedience is walking in there and cleaning the bedroom. And there's too many people in the white, maybe in the Christian identity part of the white nationalist movement, who think just knowing the country's a mess is somehow satisfactory to God. And they have to be involved in doing something to clean up. They actually have to do something. And so many people don't want to do anything. They want to just, oh, the country's a mess. We've got to repent. And yet they don't want to repent themselves, because repentance means doing something.
Right.
And so many people don't want to do that.
Or so often, instead of even doing that, they actually try to accelerate it because they're so desperate to get it going.
Yeah, I've heard people say, "I'm going to vote for Hillary to make it, help it all, bring it all down." You know, that's just silly. Right. That's silly too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, I think
we are out of time. So we appreciate everyone listening to the Nice Party Roundtable. And I'm Jason Robb,
Thomas Robb,
Andrew Thomas,
Brendan Eugene.
Okay, and until next time, this is Thomas Robb reminding you to love your God and to love your people.